You're listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast with your hosts, Bobby McMahon and Owen O'Callaghan.
Welcome to this week's Soccer Report Extra podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon, alongside me is Owen O'Callaghan, and the controls we have producer Luke Crawford. Robbie Keane moved from the Premier League to MLS and scored on his debut against San Jose Earthquakes. We'll be talking things Robbie. The Barclays Premier League brought us round two of action. Already only two teams have a 100% record. That, of course, pending the outcome of the Manchester United Spurs clash on Monday evening. We had a cracker of a FIFA Under 20 final on Saturday. We'll be looking back at that. And finally, we'll go back to Spain and look at the Spanish Super Cup. The league may not be kicking off, but it certainly kicked off at the end of the Spanish Super Cup. So, Owen, let's get going. Robbie Keane, really a move out of the blue. Didn't see that one coming.
Apparently Robbie didn't see it coming either. Going by his unveiling, the CEO of AEG, who's Tim Lewicki, spoke in glowing terms of how quickly this particular deal came about. He stepped up to kind of welcome Robbie to the franchise and was detailing, you know, took us 2 years to get David Beckham to agree to come here.
I thought
here.
You said it was Tim Lewicki. It sounds like it was John Wayne doing the press conference.
Listen, button it, all right? A lot of people are very fond of my impressions on this podcast. So then he continued, barring the ignorant interruption. He continued by saying, Landon took us about 12 months before he agreed to come back to California. From Robbie's case, it took him 7 days to agree to get here. And there's just silence in the room. And Robbie's kind of looking bemused. Has he just insulted me? Or what do I do here? Apparently on a Friday afternoon, someone got in touch in the LA Galaxy and went, here's our offer. And Keane went, yeah, I'll take that. What do we have to do to make this deal happen?
Is this a deal that really kind of satisfies perhaps Robbie's ego as much as anything? Because it wasn't looking like Premier League was... There's pretty much Premier League interest in him.
Well, I think there was Premier League interest in him if he took a cut in his wages.
Dropped significantly down the league.
Yeah, I mean, from Spurs,
he was at West Ham last year trying to dig them out of relegation trouble.
Also, though, he was injured for 6 weeks after initially coming. You know, I think that people will look at his time at West Ham and go, oh, we didn't save him from relegation. That means he's crap. I think that, you know...
I think we said that, actually.
This is where we play in the archive clip. Severe egg on our face. I think, you know, I've been on Twitter and having back and forth with a lot of people about this. Robbie Keane is not an MLS player. I think he still has a lot to offer a Premier League side. I think that even a championship would be a step down for him.
How much did the Liverpool experience damage Robbie Keane, do you think?
It damaged him a lot.
Confidence-wise?
Confidence-wise, I think he also probably questioned his role on a pitch.
I never understood, and I know this is digging up old stuff here, but I never understood why Benitez wanted to sign Robbie Keane.
Well, apparently it wasn't Benitez's deal, was it? It was Hicks and Gillette who wanted a signing and fancied Keane and sort of pushed it upon Benitez to do it.
Because Keane's always, and we talked about this on the way, so many good things we talked about this on the way to the studio this morning, but Keane has always been at his best playing on the shoulder of the defence. He has not been that kind of withdrawn striker. Maybe when he was younger, when he could run at players, but in the last number of years, his good years, to my mind, his best time with Spurs was with Berbatov. Oh. And Berbatov would drift deep in that kind of inside left channel or float either side, and Keane would just be up there and be looking for these magical little moves that Berbatov and magical little passes from Berbatov and just feed off them. That was him at his best.
The thing, what I always think about Robbie Keane is that he started, and this is probably going to sound unfair to him, but he started seeing himself as a different kind of player. I think he probably had aspirations of being a kind of a playmaker, that he'd drop deep, put his foot on the ball, make things happen. Yeah. At Liverpool, he tried to do that. Yeah. They played him in that deeper
role.
When
in reality, if he played in midfield at all, around his Spurs time, he was better. They were better when they were trying to push for a win or push for a draw, and he'd be going out on the left side and cutting in to the holes that the centre was perhaps leaving as he moved. Mm-hmm.
And you know, you kind of go back to, I mean, my first memory of Robbie Keane is when he was at Wolves. Yeah. As a youth player, and just, you know, you heard murmurings of this kid.
17-year-old, I think, at the time.
Well, when he was at Wolves, it was still, you know, he was still like 15, 16. And he was just a different kind of player. The Republic of Ireland had never had a player like this in a long, long time. I remember his home debut.
It's very unusual.
I remember his home debut vividly against Argentina. You had an Argentina team that had Batistuta, Ariel Ortega, who was wearing the number 10 at that time, and Keane demolished the Argentines. As we mentioned, that kind of left-hand side of the pitch. He was just doing things that this is an 18-year-old, so fresh-faced, but he was, if you can picture it, a defender on his shoulder. He had his back to goal. This is on the touchline. And with his shimmy, the ball would just bamboozle its way past the defender and Keane was gone. It was just that drop of a shoulder and he was off.
Bouncing around here a little bit, but just a thought crossed my mind. Theo Walcott brought his book out this week. Has Robbie Keane ever written a book?
No.
You know something? Robbie Keane's book would be a good book. Because, well, think about it. Wolves, Coventry.
Inter
Milan.
The mess at Leeds.
The mess at Leeds. Going to Spurs, going to Liverpool. Now going to the States, there's got to be good stuff in there.
I think, but also I think it comes back to Robbie's personality. I think anyone who and again, this feeds into the wider MLS thing.
But the Inter Milan one sticks out there like a sore thumb, doesn't it? I remember what a sensation that was when there was a linkage with Inter Milan, and that time with Coventry. Coventry were actually a pretty good team. Yeah. Gordon Strachan was in charge at that time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And they were a very decent team, but it was still one of these things when Inter Milan were linked with Robbie Keane. Everybody went, yeah, good
snigger,
one.
Snigger.
And the next thing, he was gone.
He was gone and didn't do too bad
did
a job.
Did Hodgson sign him?
Oh, dear.
Sorry for laying all these questions on you, but these things just kind of jump into my mind. It was certainly the Hodgson kind of era.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I'm not sure it was actually him, but it's certainly about that time. But it was never...
99, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there was never a kind of rationale for him going Inter at that time that I can remember. They just signed him. They liked the look of him.
The thing is that, you know, what you mentioned at his press conference, which we can't forget, is he's just been said, listen, this is a challenge. And when you look at his career, the Inter Milan move being one huge example of it, he's never kind of turned down the opportunity to step up to the plate and do something different. The Liverpool experience just was, to be honest, humiliating for him. Because Robbie Keane is firstly an icon at Irish international level. But also, as everyone's alluded to, in the Premier League, he's a really consistent performer.
Yeah.
And having to go through
double figures
spell,
most years up into that Liverpool time.
I mean, it's just been, you know, it certainly scarred him. Marcello Lippi? Yeah, Marcello Lippi signed him.
Okay. Lippi, if I'm not mistaken, Lippi had a cup of coffee at Inter.
As did Robbie Keane.
Yes, I think it was a quick espresso and Lippi was off.
Calcio
and
coffee.
Producer Lucas just checking here. Lasted, what, 3 months? 4 months?
I don't know, but Tardelli then said Keane was surplus to requirements, so...
Tardelli?
Yeah, then Inter said Tardelli was surplus to requirements after that.
And now Tardelli is assistant coach to Giovanni Trapattoni.
Trapattoni, but...
As Robbie is...
The Lippi thing, he went from Juventus, he went to Inter. He got knocked out by the Swedish team out of the qualifying round of the Champions League.
That's true.
And I think maybe he was even fired before Serie A started.
Wow.
If he did have any games in Serie A, it was probably no more than 2 or 3. So that's what I mean by an espresso.
Okay. The Robbie Keane story has started with a bang because, as you alluded to in your intro, he scored against San Jose Earthquakes in his first game, literally off the plane from London. And also, we should not forget, I'm sorry about this, I'm sorry for picking on it. This is just such a cosmetic thing. But Robbie Keane arrived at LAX airport. And Robbie Keane is married to a girl from Ireland called Claudine. And mutton dressed as lamb is all I'm going to say. The pair arrive and they come through and there's probably a gathering of about 12 people with Irish flags and whatever. Woo, Robbie, we love you, man.
Rent a leprechaun.
Rent a leprechaun. And they're there posing for paparazzi photographs with Claudine Keane being every wag stereotype that you could possibly be, with her Christian Louboutin 6-inch heels, her midriff on show, and a pair of bright blue jeans that are clung to her ass. Robbie just standing next to her, kind of looking bemused by the whole experience, and they just look like two people from Ireland who have arrived in LAX and are going, all right, this is LA then. This is pretty exciting. and people expecting a David Beckham-esque sort of experience, you're not going to get it. Look at his press conference. He's not the most personality-driven of individuals. And it was funny because you had like the three amigos. You had Keane, Donovan, and Beckham in a row. And it was just a litany of just banality. It was like, you begin with Keane. Al Rabi, you must be so amazed that you've arrived in Major League Soccer. Yeah, you know, it's been great, you know, I'm looking forward to kind of, you know, playing. Well, this question's for Landon. Landon, what does a player like Robbie bring to the locker room?
Well, you know, Robbie, I've got a lot of time for Robbie. He's a great player. This one is for David. David, you've obviously experienced, you know, Robbie from his time at Spurs. What's he like?
Well, obviously, Robbie's just a talented professional. It's just great for him to be here.
Well, amazing. Thank you for that. Shedding so much light on the signing of a new designated player. All of you are just so entertaining. Thank you all for your time and good night.
Round two of the Barclays Premier League. We're still, this is going to be recorded on Monday, so we've got Manchester United Spurs tonight. But City won their second game. Probably tighter than we thought. It was one of these games that really should have been out of sight, I thought, for City.
Strange game, wasn't it?
It was a very strange game. But City come through 3-2. Times when they looked very smooth and times they looked very rough.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder sometimes with Mancini that maybe he doesn't make things a little bit more complicated than he has to at times. A very strange formation this time. Yaya Touré was sitting at the base, sitting in front of the defence. Barry just in front of him. Silva and Milner just in front of these two. It was no width. Mikai Richards wasn't getting forward. Kolarov got forward a little bit more, but nice touches from Aguero. Silva had a good game. Milner, very, very good. Dzeko beginning to perhaps show a little bit, but it goes back to something I said when they signed Aguero. I think the question was asked in Fox Soccer Report: is this, if Tevez left and Aguero comes, does that make Man City stronger? And the answer I had was I think it does, because I think Aguero's got the ability to play with other players as he did with Forlan at Atletico Madrid. Well, I'm never sure Tevez is actually built up a partnership with anybody apart from Wayne Rooney, perhaps.
Yeah, the Rooney ones, yeah, is an interesting example. I think it's Aguero is a little bit fresh faced, isn't he, compared to Carlos Tevez?
Yeah,
that's he tends to play with a smile on his face, and I think that feeds into any sort of burgeoning relationship with somebody like Dzeko. Yeah. I mean, you can see that if Dzeko is paired with a Tevez is someone who gets on your back. Probably, you know, he's the guy, he throws his eyes up when he doesn't get a pass, and you know, Dzeko trying to find his feet.
Tevez is just so intense all the time, where Aguero has a pacing to his game that's kind of a little bit different.
Yeah,
and when he explodes, he explodes.
Exactly. I think we should probably talk Man City by focusing, well, not maybe focusing, but certainly mentioning one thing: Carlos Tevez being brought on as a sub for Aguero in the second half.
Yeah.
The same Carlos Tevez who said he hated Manchester, that he was not coming back and playing for Manchester.
Do you think he's going to go before next Wednesday?
Do you think
what about the Eto's deal seems to have gone through to go to that place wherever it is?
Angshi Makhachkala in Russia.
Is it in Russia? I guess it is in Russia. Yeah, it's just in kind of Asian Russia.
Yes, just to, you know, billionaire.
I guess
paradise.
They really don't want to play in Europe, do they?
It's one of these examples where, I mean, he's offering him, he's been offered something like, you know, 25 million a week or something, you know, to play in the Russian Premier League.
Plus three cows.
Yes, yeah, and your own private jet. Yeah. You just whenever you want, just use it. It's just there for you.
We'll just park it.
But it's interesting, that deal, if it does fall through, even though it does look as if it's quite inevitable, if it does fall through, maybe City would fancy some sort of a deal there. Because let's be honest, no player nor team is going to just sign Carlos Tevez because they can't afford it.
But we could enter now if they're pocketing the money from Eto.
Possibly.
Put some money in their jeans now.
That's true.
But could he, you know, then... It's so difficult winter just now because you're not quite sure what Gasperini is going to actually...
Yeah.
Is actually trying to do.
And also... As much as Inter is fascinating, we'll obviously get into Inter later on the season. But Manchester City, it's interesting. Again, as you pointed to, you're never quite sure of Manchester City, and I don't know that where that unease comes from.
You know, maybe Owen, maybe it's just history. Yeah. Maybe it's people have watched the game for a long time with City, the brand of City. Yes, they're trying to, there's this new brand evolving and it's a work in progress and all the things. But sitting at the back of our minds is that blue shirt means inconsistency and blowing up in your face at some point. And it still, I think, is going to take a long time for that old view of City to disappear because it's ingrained.
Yeah.
We've seen it for so... God, you'd have to be a fan of this game for too long to remember when City were in the third tier.
Yeah.
And 2-0 down with a couple of minutes to go in a playoff game.
Yes.
You know, they've had their moments, but they haven't had consistent moments for a long, long time. So it's very hard to... That's what a brand is, actually, after all, isn't it?
And I just think, you know, I remember talking to you about it on the show, on Fox Soccer Report, when we were previewing the season. And, you know, we were just talking about... You don't get the feeling that Mancini is sure about his squad.
Yeah.
That he's got doubts about, you know, you mentioned how impressive Milner was, how, you know, and you're like...
But he's just as liable to be out next week.
Exactly. You know, you're not...
There's a bit of the Benitez about him, isn't there?
A little bit. A little bit of that constant tinkering with, am I sold on this? As opposed to just being, made a decision... Let's go with it.
See, it's interesting because the original Tinker Man, of course, was named by the English press was Ranieri. But Ranieri, as I remember, tinkered with players. He didn't tinker so much with formations or tactics or the way the team set out. It certainly didn't strike me that way at that time.
Yeah.
But there is a bit of the Benitez about Mancini in terms of the look at himself as perhaps a somewhat the tactical mastermind. Mm-hmm. So he's always, you know, and that's what managers are there for, to give you an edge in tactics, I guess, but perhaps maybe overplays it a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, you look at somebody like a Ferguson, it's very straightforward, isn't it?
Just pragmatic.
He moves players in and out.
Yeah.
But we pretty much know what it's going to be. It's pretty much going to be the same system. Yeah. Get the ball, get it wide, attack the fullbacks, get the ball in the middle.
I mean, he identifies the same sort of players all the time, pacey,
and they just,
young.
It's a plug and play.
Yeah, and you just hop in and do it. The thing about City that I will say, David Silva, again, I know I keep on rambling on about it, and I just think it's a measure of the guy's career to date, where he's got to a certain level and just had that difficulty in making that final step to the highest level. It's just how he fades from games.
Mm-hmm. He does drift.
He was impressive against Bolton, and they did grant him. It's something about both. Like with Silva, the one thing he thrives on is giving him space and time on a ball, and they just gave him spades of it. But again, as a second half wore on, as Bolton weren't going anywhere, you know, they kept in it. You were looking at Silva to pick up a ball, get past a player, you know, get to a byline, get across, you know, and it was just...
I'm struggling as you're talking about him to kind of pigeonhole him, because I'm really can't come up with a player that I've seen very like him. He's certainly obviously a Spanish-type player, a modern Spanish-type kind of midfield player.
Yeah.
We see so many of them because he's got fantastic touch.
Yeah.
He obviously plays great little reverse passes. He's obviously very inventive. But you're right, there is a semblance of, you look at the difference between Silva and the World Cup, where he became a little bit marginalised, as opposed to Silva in the European Championship of 2008, where he was really, that was the emergence of Silva.
Absolutely.
To a point, he'd had a little bit of a spotty career up to that point. He played for Celta Vigo. I think he was out on loan to them for a number of years. And I think they put him out on loan, actually, in Celta Vigo. And then they got relegated and he went to, I guess it was Valencia from there. So his emergence has been reasonably rapid, but he does have that little bit, you're never quite sure what you're going to get.
Also, it feeds into...
It's not that he plays a bad game.
No.
No, he doesn't play bad. He just disappears from the game.
It's that on the... He's 7 out of 10. And then when you're looking for him to just push a little bit and he just... There's just that little... I don't know what it is. And hopefully listeners out there can understand what I'm trying to get at.
I'm not saying he's a bad player. It's just that there just seems to be more there. Yeah. It's how you get the more out of him.
Yeah. It feeds into possibly segueing into something else. Mancini constantly talking about wanting more players. One side who won this weekend, who we were on the way here talking about how many players they could potentially have in the next couple of days, is Chelsea.
Yeah. Mata's on the verge this morning.
Mata on the verge, still question marks about Modric.
Which I still have no sense of what they're going to what they're really actually trying to do with Juan Mata. Suggesting that maybe Villas-Boas is going with the strategy of he's keeping things the same. He's going with it, see how it works out. And if it doesn't work out, then he can make changes. But Mata is a very different kind of player to somebody, the kind of player that Chelsea have had up to now. He's almost going back to the kind of the pre-Ranieri, kind of the hodl. I wouldn't say he's not a Zola, because he's not nearly as dynamic as a Zola.
No.
But he's a little bit of a throwback. He's certainly not a hard-working, grafting kind of Malouda.
Silky.
He's not a square-passing Obi Mikel.
No.
He's not a get into the box and have a shot Lampard. So he does give them something different.
Yeah.
But how you actually find a way of moulding that into the Chelsea system. Maybe I'm making too much of this. Maybe, you know, he's just a good player that's going to find his his right position for Chelsea. But he's a great addition. Just wonder if Villas-Boas is going to start, I wouldn't say tinkering actually, because I don't think it's a tinker, but really substantially changing who his Chelsea team is made up. Surplus of forwards.
Oh, it's incredible. What I always, and again, it's whatever you take from it, but it's always worth looking at managers on a sideline and how they behave. And with Villas-Boas, he just seems to be a ball of energy. Just it's all just caught up
and tension.
Yeah, it's just, you know, whether it's stress, whether it's just anything, you know, he reacts to every chance. You know, he's constantly on his feet. He's down on his hunkers. Yeah. He's move up here, take that throw, do this, drop back a little bit, push forward, drop back.
Wonder how much of that, and we didn't really see much on in terms of how he reacted when his time with Porto.
Yeah.
I just wonder if this is a man that really understands and really sees the need to get some credibility right off the top and not have a stumbling start, and is desperate that things go right, so he has that little bit of credibility perhaps to call on with the fans and the media if he decides to change some stuff.
I always come back to that point about, you know, how during a game, you know, I always John Giles, who I had the pleasure of working with back in Ireland, would always say stuff about team talks. Because one of the things you always hear from commentary teams is, wonder what's going to be said at halftime.
Or they tell us what was going to be said, was said, even though they don't know what was said.
Yeah, and I remember one time just asking him about, you know, does it make any difference? And he said, it makes no difference to players. I mean, you could go in and tell them, you need to do more of this, you need to do more of that. It's you out there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you see Villas-Boas on the sidelines, you know, or essentially what Gerald said, it makes minimal difference. And you know, Villas-Boas being the cheerleader, you know, every second he's telling them something. You're wondering, is it just a little bit of a, you know, you see the more.
It's more about him than it is about actually making the team a better team at that point.
Or maybe it's just a kind of a little bit of a tick that he has, that it's just something. It's his way of releasing whatever's inside of him, and he just needs to get it out to his players. But it's just the body language stuff is quite interesting to monitor. Also,
and the fact that he's in a position. Now, Porto last year and this year with Chelsea, he is the manager. He has been the background. You guarantee he was never like that when he was part of the background.
No, and it's
the background staff. I don't know.
It's just you know, with the obviously they've signed Lukaku, and they've got Drogba, they've got Danny Sturridge.
Sturridge come back from
Torres.
Suspension. I think he's got one more game.
They've got Malouda up top. They've got Anelka. They've got Kalou. You go through them, but they play with one striker through the middle.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what the master plan is. Because clearly, Torres, in a similar way to Dzeko at Man City, Dzeko, you know, plays well with a partner.
Yeah.
He enjoys that. When he's on his own, he's isolated, he doesn't have the mobility to be as good an asset to his side if he doesn't have someone alongside him. Torres loves being on his own.
Yeah.
He just thrives on it.
But he needs somebody to feed him the ball.
He needs someone to feed him. So,
a la Gerrard in his prime.
Exactly. So there's all of these little subplots to what's going on at Chelsea at the moment. The arrival of Mata, the arrival of Modric, if that happens. You're just looking at, you know, as you're trying to figure out the bigger picture. It's difficult to pinpoint exactly what they're going to do with all of these people. And how best you get, you know, the best from who you have. Because Torres, they've spent a lot of money. So Torres is your number one striker. Well, so you have to get the best of him.
I think you're zeroing on something that's really important for everybody to always understand, remember that it's a game about getting the best out of your best players. It's not about necessarily getting the best out of your poorer players.
Yeah.
It's the guys that change games that you should be building the team around.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where everything has to be built to making it easy for them or as easy as possible to be successful, because that will win games for you.
Which brings us very quickly, I know that producer Luke is gone.
We're a producer nightmare.
We are a producer's nightmare. Look at him. He just slumped over his computer. He's just not even interested in what we're talking about.
No, he's given up.
He's given up all hope.
He is very...
He lost interest during my impression segment.
This is not Vierge Bosch.
No, it's not.
No.
What I wanted to mention very quickly, because we talked about it on our way here, about getting the best from your players, from your best players, Frank Lampard.
Yes.
You're not sure about him.
Well, Lampard's always been a bit of a streaky player in terms of his goal scoring.
Mm.
And to
loves
some
deflections.
But he loves shooting as well. And, you know, you don't shoot, you don't score.
Yeah.
He's a little bit of a, you know, he's very straightforward, very simple. He's about getting the ball and going and making one, two, getting in the box and having shots and all that kind of stuff. And I just, I think this is going to be the most interesting thing about Chelsea under Vierge Bosch is how he deals with Frank Lampard, whether he sees Frank Lampard as somebody who can continue to produce and give to this Chelsea team over the next couple of years, or whether he sees the need to begin to phase out and change. Let's face it, Chelsea, you can talk about Drogba and you can talk about Anelka and Torres coming in and all this, but this team has been about John Terry and Frank Lampard for the last probably, what, 6-7 years?
Yeah.
Since Ranieri was the one that finally started getting Lampard to score goals.
Mm.
Mourinho benefited from it, and he has been so central to the success of this Chelsea team, week in, week out, getting goals from the midfield. And you just wonder, one, we know there's going to be a time when he's just not going to be able to do it anymore. Now, does the manager begin to make that change before it becomes obvious, or does he just let it run and run and run and then deal with it when it happens?
It's a little bit like the Scholes situation at United, whereby, you know, you've got a player who...
It's hard to see Lampard turn into a deep line midfield player, isn't
that's
it?
That's the thing.
That's the thing, yeah.
I mean, is and
Scholes could reinvent himself. I'm not sure Frank can.
We just spoke on our way here. Interesting for listeners maybe to have this debate amongst themselves. The difference is once Steven Gerrard returns from fitness for Liverpool, to see how they use him.
Gerrard could play right back. Gerrard could play at centre back if he had. He'd started off as a left back.
And yeah, and
you really could play any place.
Whereas with Lampard, you take out that drive, getting on the end of a surgeon running into the box, and there you go, from 20 yards, bottom corner.
When you don't have that anymore, you're not sure what you've actually got left.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting. Now we move on to the FIFA Under 20 final. Saturday night in Bogota, Colombia. We saw extra time. We did not see penalty kick decider. What a good game it was. There's something about that age level. Now, I think that over the Under 20 tournament, to my mind, has been a little bit spotted. Perhaps more so than seen in the past. There was some good stuff and there was some stuff that was not all that entertaining. But I thought Saturday night was a good, good game. Wide open. Portugal, without conceding a goal, lose 3. And lose the final to Brazil.
The U20s has always been, yeah, I mean, you mentioned that kind of free-flowing, and there's just
a lack of
cynicism.
Yeah, the pitch looked like twice as big as you see on a Saturday game.
You know, just guys at an age are like, oh, space, and it's just, you push the game to its limits, and it's open and expansive.
Well, you know, part of it perhaps is just experience of pacing, players pacing themselves as well, mm-hmm, in that kind of environment.
Yeah.
It just seemed that when Dudu came on after about 60 minutes, came on for Coutinho,
what
he inherited was this pitch that suddenly looked about 250 yards long instead of 110 or 115, and just getting space, and the whole Brazilian plan seemed to be get Dudu the ball and let's see what he can do.
Mm-hmm. And
Do squared.
But this game obviously went to extra time.
Yeah.
With Portugal in front, Brazil come back, and it was again. We mentioned Dudu. It's quite, you know, it becomes a kind of a running joke. It's like a sketch show, and someone comes in with a catchphrase, "Ah, Dudu," and everyone laughs. But
everyone?
Maybe not. Maybe it's just me. His setup for that second goal, to bring Brazil level, it was just, it was so funny because it was so old fashioned and so retro, that I had never seen anything like it. It was just put a ball under your foot, on under the sole of your foot, and just roll it back. It was a Cruyff turn,
but move it,
but not a Cruyff turn.
Yeah. It was in the spirit.
Yes, of exactly. Cruyff,
alluding to a Cruyff turn without the turn.
Yeah,
really.
And you know, you're looking at your defender in that situation, and you're like,
he was just so quick off the couple of yards, so boom, and the shot's away. Mika, the Portuguese keeper, forced to parry it, and Oscar's just standing there going, "Oh, thanks very much."
Oscar's like, "Oh, two for me.
Yeah, great,
lovely jubbly."
Yeah.
That was 2-2. Did you want to talk about the rest?
Nelson Oliveira. That was a go-ahead goal for, I believe he set up the first one as well, but he certainly scored the second one.
And the first one that he did set up for Portugal, it was one of these examples where he just doesn't give up on the ball. It's gone very close to that touchline.
He looks like a big, powerful runner.
He does.
Oh, he's no silky winger.
No.
He's got some turn of pace.
Kind of a little bit maybe like Simão. I'm not sure if
with a little bit more,
bulk, and Simão always just getting to a certain level and never fulfilling his potential, really. A bit like Ricardo Quaresma, I suppose. So that's how he set up the first goal. The second goal,
goalkeeping error, but once again, powerful run at the byline and just getting the shot away.
Because you know, when he picks up the ball,
it doesn't look like it's very much.
There's not much
to go.
And Brazil have numbers back,
yep.
And he just flicks on the jet engines and just takes off, gets it back into the box, and Portugal have their second goal. We went into extra time, and again, I mean, you watch this in full. I had to watch it in kind of drips and drabs, but the ebb and flow of it. I
didn't sense that that it was preordained that Brazil were going to win it.
Mm.
I thought Brazil had the better of it, and then they had that kind of key
jack-in-the-box
substitution that I wouldn't say changed the game, but gave them a focus for somebody who was always liable to win it for them. So you kind of felt that it was maybe tilted in Brazil's favour. But Portugal were still getting forward. And as I said before, the park was big and long and there was lots of space. So every time that ball moved forward for Portugal, you always had them. I had in the back of my mind that you're one slip away here from somebody going right through and getting a chance and could score.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still very much on a fine line at that time. Now, Oscar hits this cross come short that finishes flying in the net. And then after that, Brazil started putting their foot on the ball a little bit. There was a couple of perhaps more tentative moments in the back, but you just got the feeling that maybe Portugal could not come back one more time. And that, sure enough, that's what happened. But it was a rip-roarer of a game.
The winning goal, in true Ronaldinho fashion, against England in the 2002 World Cup. Did Oscar mean this?
I don't think so.
I know he did.
But he's not going to admit it, is he?
No. He's just going to let other people make up their minds.
Yeah, so it was a foot of God.
Foot of God, I got it. for anyone who didn't see the goal, he just picks it up. He's inside the box.
He's just kind of around that corner. Well, the one thing FIFA did a really good job of was the highlights on the FIFA website, FIFA.com. So I think it's still up. You could go there.
Sure.
But it was on, in Canada, it was on CBC Bold.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to tweet this because the insight was absolutely stunning. I was absolutely taken back. We're 15 minutes to go in extra time, and we're told that both teams are tiring. Shit, I wouldn't have expected that.
That was
a stunner.
You know what?
Me.
That is terrible from both teams.
Yeah.
The cheek of them, the arrogance to be tired.
Yeah.
You know,
15 minutes to go in the final. How many games did they play over that period of time?
Three group games.
I don't think anybody would have realized that.
It's foresight. It is foresight. Tapping into the inner realms of the game.
I now understand why we pay all that tax money to the CBC for that stunning insight.
It
would be really nice if you're going to put people on these shows that could actually have followed the games before the final.
It's
blatantly obvious they had no clue about that tournament. None. Zilch.
That's disappointing, isn't it?
It wasn't disappointing. It just pissed me off.
Does this, I mean, you've talked about 2014 before in terms of this Brazilian squad. Is there members of this team that...
Well, Henrique won the golden ball and the golden boot. So he got both.
You would look at him. Yeah.
Coutinho, I think it's good. We mentioned him on the show on Friday.
In the wider context of, you know, Ganso and Neymar currently, you know, playing regularly.
But we've seen it before. You know, 3 years out from the World Cup, it is absolutely possible to make that jump in 3 years.
Plenty of time to get caught in the wasteland.
Yeah, but it's also, as we've seen with many other players under 20 level, maybe not so much the under 17s, but falling off the face of the earth as well. But, you know, Coutinho going to Inter Milan, he had, you know, a little bit of injury problems last year, but when he played under Benitez, which is very unusual to see Benitez giving a young player that kind of respect and responsibility early on, but will he get that game time with Inter this year? He has got the potential to step up, absolutely convinced of it,
mm-hmm.
And perhaps be an effective player. I know that Brazil, Menezes is looking at that younger team that he played in South America, but there's maybe players to add. And Enrique, I guess just because of what he did, would have to keep an eye on him, but Coutinho would be the one I would say is most likely to succeed.
And very quickly, last time Portugal and Brazil played in the final was 1991. Portugal won that time. It was their golden generation of players.
Well, here's a question. What was the price of gold then, though?
Maybe
about
$400
or $500 an ounce.
Mm.
So now, what is it? Begin to zero in 2000? So this is a much more valuable Portuguese team because the price of gold's gone up. So if they're going to be a golden generation, much more inflated. So finally, we wrap up this week's Soccer Report Extra podcast by going back a few days to last Wednesday with a late kickoff in Spain. Second leg of the, is it the Super Copa they call it? I just call it the Super Cup, Spanish Super Cup. Yeah. I guess we've got the other Super Cup coming up this Friday as well, don't we?
That's true.
We've got Barcelona versus, Porto. Who won the Europa League? Porto. Right. That could be a good game.
Yeah. Barca have Falcao to get over a couple of wounded warriors.
Yeah, Falcao's gone. Atletico Madrid. A lot of money there. Ooh, that was a lot of money.
And also worth remembering that Falcao was, what we were talking about in the office, had an increase in his buyout clause in the summer when everyone was kind of preying upon him to take him to pastures new. Show us that buyout clauses mean absolutely nothing.
How many players has Villas-Boas signed from Porto? I could swear that I read that he was ready to...
Hulk as well.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of them ready to go, wasn't there, according to the papers? He was going to launch audacious bids.
A couple of...
What's an audacious bid?
It's probably a bid that you've probably picked up a copy of the Daily Mail.
Okay.
And read a rumour linking your team with a player for a certain amount. And then you go with that research and bid that amount.
So you go to your board and say, I would like to launch an audacious bid. And the board go, that's what we need, an audacious bid.
It's like these flash terms, like synergy. You go, audacious bid. Oh, he said audacious. Oh, he knows what he's doing, this lad.
We'd turn it down, but it was audacious. So there you go, son. Off you go.
There you go.
Anyway, back to Super Cup, Super Copa.
Sarcasm dripping from every orifice of this podcast.
I'm not going to go there.
That's a different podcast entirely. It's a different website entirely, for God's sake.
It's a different orifice.
Producer Luke, do you know anything about websites like that?
No.
Just silence. Anyway,
Super Copa. Super Copa. Fantastic game.
A thrilling game.
Brilliant game, but...
5 goals, sending off.
Late goals.
3
Messi winner, 2 goals from Messi. 2 goals from set pieces from Real Madrid. Knew that Barcelona defence was weak, as everybody would tell you. But overshadowed by who else but...
The special one.
Jose.
How many times do we have to continuously reference him as
the
special one?
Well, I don't. I don't.
Because considering, he named himself the special one.
I refuse to call somebody the special one. I always refuse to call Real Madrid Galacticos.
You refuse to refer to a Mexican striker by his nickname?
Yes. So there's at least 3 things I refuse to do.
I think there's substantially more things you refuse to do. You're just not willing to say them, commit them to a podcast.
I can now take the Fabregas transfer filter off Twitter for me.
Oh, yes, that's good.
So that's a move in the right direction.
I'm
coming back into the mainstream.
Jose, once again, what can we say that's in any way new about Jose Mourinho? Centre of attention after the game.
How can he get away with that? Spanish FA apparently are going to just pass on it.
But the thing is...
Because the referee didn't see it.
No, the thing is, if there is, on the side of a pitch, Messi being headbutted by Pepe...
And the referee didn't see it.
Does that mean that Pepe won't
according to the FA logic, yes. Now, the other part of that logic would be, if the referee saw it, you would need the FA to do anything about it.
Yes.
It would be handed to them.
Now, in saying that, the referee had to deal with what looked like a punch from David Villa on Mesut Ozil.
Was it?
That, because, was it Villa? Well, Ozil was... No, Villa was sent off.
Ozil's usually a pretty calm kind of guy.
Calm guy, and he was furious on that sideline. And he was pointing to his cheek as if someone had swung a punch or whatever it was. And Villa was given a red card.
Getting a slap. Maybe a Gervinho-type slap.
And also, worth pointing out that Pinto, the sub-goalkeeper...
He was right in there, wasn't he?
Was right in the mix.
I'm convinced he's not the sub-goalkeeper. He's the Spartan partner.
He just comes in.
He's just there.
Oh, and you can't miss man. Pinto, come in.
You can't miss him, can you?
Oh, it's just incredible.
Oh, the go on the basis that if somebody's going to get suspended, let's get him suspended.
What I said in the office was, if you're Tito Villanova, in that instance, okay?
You go, Pinto, take care of him.
Hey, Bouncer, take care of him, please. Jose Mourinho has just, I gouged you / pinched your cheek sort of thing. You know it's Jose Mourinho because you turn around and you swat him on the arm.
Yeah.
You're in the new camp. You've just won the Supercopa. Madrid, even though like taking the games to this limit, still can't beat you. Why, if you're not Tito Villanova, you go out and lay a haymaker across the face of Jose Mourinho? You would be a hero. Imagine knocking Jose Mourinho out in a new camp. Now, will the referee see it? So if the referee doesn't see it, you get away with it.
Yes.
So there's logic to it.
I can see where you're going with the Spanish FA thing.
There would be a marble statue made of you, not of Michael Jackson, but of you, and that it would be pride of place.
But not Craven Cottage.
Not Craven Cottage. Outside the new camp. It would just be the most amazing
moment. It'd be like the Rocky statue in Philadelphia.
And what smart quip could Jose have after that?
He'd go,
when he couldn't talk because of Villanova's force. Because
his jaw would be wild shut.
When he's eating through a tube. He can't say anything.
We sound like we're actually suggesting that would be appropriate.
And it
which
would
is
not
nothing.
We would not condone close. That.
No,
we are not condoning
our
behavior.
Minds have just wandered here.
We've now entered fancy land. What if land, for instance?
So let's look at Mourinho's actions, which we've kind of talked about, but the effect on the players, in essence, Marcelo.
Mm.
Now, we should also talk about, I didn't hear it on the TV, but it seems to be pretty much people say there was monkey chants at the new camp, as there was monkey chants for Alves at the Bernabeu.
Yep.
Which, of course, I think lays out a much wider wider problem. As somebody pointed out over the weekend, as UEFA are taking steps against Arsene Wenger, as anybody pointed
for
out,
having a mobile phone.
Yeah, they're perhaps missing a bigger issue, a bigger societal issue here than the fact that Wenger's communicating with his bench, is the fact that you've got racism rampant in the Spanish stadiums and an FA that's not doing anything about it.
But what I always think about in that situation is, what do guys like Dani Alves and Yaya Toure and Thierry Henry, when he was there, feel about Barcelona fans...
It never makes sense, does it? Monkey
chants in the direction of Marcelo.
Idiots.
When you're also a black player.
I know. It makes no sense
whatsoever. So, no, if there are supporters of your own club who feel this way about essentially a minority in a culture, well, surely you are part of that minority.
Yeah.
So surely they're also discussing you and attacking you when they attack somebody from an opposing team.
Well,
but you never hear public statements from these players. You never hear, listen... That's disgusting. I can't believe that my own fans would do that to another player. But it just exists.
But
it's
even
like
going
a vacuum.
Back to Aragonés comments.
Yeah, there you
years
go.
Ago, was
you Marco Senna as an integral member of that Spanish team.
Makes no sense at all, does it? It's just, well, racism is stupid to begin with. So I guess we shouldn't expect any kind of common sense or making any logical sense to this.
Now, speaking of logical sense, you know, obviously Marcelo had to put up with a lot of stuff that was happening out of the game, but he should have been sent off long before he
clearly
got involved on the sideline.
Clearly had a stud, studded Messi.
A floating stud.
Oh, yeah. And Eric Cantona.
Mid-air, just extending his right leg and just making sure he makes contact with Messi's upper thigh.
He knew exactly what he was doing in that.
Escaped on that occasion. After they became involved with the kind of a heated discussion, he got a yellow card. Messi completely revved up for this because really he was persecuted.
To be able to play that kind of football that Barcelona play, in particular, knowing that half the time you're going to, not half the time, but you're certainly going to take get whacked.
Mm-hmm.
And Messi, I think, is just, he just keeps on going in. He goes into heavy traffic.
Yeah.
And he does it at speed as well.
He takes the hits. Yeah. And he'll dust himself off and he'll get back up and he'll do it again.
And he'll start all over again.
And it's reasons like that that make him the world's greatest player. And probably the greatest player that I've seen since I've been born.
He just continues to marvel. I've seen a few of
them. You look for chinks in his armor. The only chink that you can try to grasp is when he sometimes reacts to a bad tackle.
Yeah. He hasn't got a right foot. What about his right foot, though?
Oh, well, he's useless on his right. And he can't head. So you take those two aspects of his game. He's useless, really.
And what about...
Compared to players in the 60s.
Wet night in Stoke.
Wet night, he couldn't do it. Couldn't do it in that Britannia. That tight atmosphere.
Well, I was listening to...
Ryan Shawcross biting at your ankles.
Listen, Alan Curbishley and Andy Townsend yesterday on Satanton, they were talking about Aguero. And Curbishley didn't exactly go there, but he said he alluded enough to it. He mentioned that Argentine players he's dealt with, he signed Mascherano. I guess he was with Mascherano in
West Ham.
Round at Mascherano and Tevez time, yeah. So he knows his players pretty well. But the other Argentine players he's ever come across, and very tough customers. The thing that English media and others seem to fail to grasp is Argentina play in the winter in a climate that's not unlike England.
That's a very, very good point.
So a wet night in Stoke is probably pretty much the same as a wet night in Mar del Plata.
Probably is.
I don't know that. Mar del Plata might be.
For any
Partly it's quite nice. Yeah, it's like a wet night in Blackpool.
For any Argentinian listeners out there.
Maybe you can help us on that one.
Help us out. Send in your comments.
But all you had to see was the... just look at the Copa America.
Oh, freezing conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Obviously, we were kind of leaving ourselves short in this discussion relating to where do Real Madrid go from here?
Yes.
They're getting closer, that's for sure. But they've got... It's interesting, Mourinho's post-game comments. I'm not apologising for what I did, because what I did was defending Real Madrid. So, you know, it's that little sort of reverse psychology.
What's that? The old thing about patriotism being the last refuge of rogues? It's a form of patriotism, isn't it? I did it for the
interesting
club.
Quote, yeah. Listen, I committed mass murder, but I had a cause, so that makes it okay. Charles Manson, listen. I had a cause, man. I killed all those people, but I had a cause, which makes me better than you. I'm not saying that Jose Mourinho is a modern day Charles Manson before someone picks on that. But they're getting closer. This game was in the balance until Messi scored his second goal of the night. Madrid came out again. It's high intensity, just pressing fast every time they got it moving.
How did Real Madrid keep that up though for a season? Or don't they?
Or do they just turn it on whenever they play Barcelona?
Yeah.
But interesting, as you pointed out, the two goals came from set pieces.
Yeah.
It didn't come from quick moves on the edge of the penalty area, a little flick here, and suddenly Ronaldo's in. They came from
first one across.
Benzema
came back.
Gets a cross back in, yeah. And Ronaldo gets a touch on it, yeah. And the second one,
Abidal
Benzema does very
slow.
Well.
Yeah.
You know, Pepe had the header, and it comes to Benzema, and he just had to contort his body a little bit and just stab it into the corner.
Footwork was very good on it.
Obviously, Barca's goals were Barca. What we've come to expect from them, just really well worked.
It was a good point made on, I think it was the Man City Bolton game, just to pull us back. Somebody mentioned Aguero. If Mourinho had his way, Aguero would be at the Bernabeu. That would have been interesting, wouldn't it?
It would have been very interesting. But once again, you're trying to look at it to see how he'd work.
I think he'd work.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, but I just think that...
No, I think... I'd take him over Benzema or Higuain any day.
Yeah, but he's not a line leader, though, is Aguero.
Oh, he can. He could do it. He can do anything.
You think so?
Yeah. No, he can. that sounded like a little bit kind of walk on water, but I think Aguero has got... He can adapt himself to play right across that line. And you're not going to be able to throw long balls up to him. He's not that kind of centre forward, but... I don't think there's anybody better than Aguero that I've seen in the modern game for role in the centre half. He's got that Romario arse.
He's got Romario arse.
Yeah, and Romario was brilliant at it, and Aguero was brilliant at it as well.
Richard Dunn was also quite.
Well, he is, but Richard Dunn doesn't quite turn quite as quick as Aguero does. But Aguero, to play the ball on his feet and allow him to turn that a big centre-half's brilliant at it. Mm. I think that's a missing piece, and I think you missed out on him.
You think so?
Yep. Or a significant missing piece.
I'm going to say that's a controversial statement to me.
I think so. Think we'll get lots of comments, or people will just go...
No, I think probably a lot of people would agree with you.
You think so?
I think probably less people would agree with me for saying it's controversial.
Okay.
I just think that Aguero, the type of player Aguero is, for coming up against Barcelona.
Rolling PK. The Mascherano experiment is getting kind of kudos just now. I'm still not convinced that's... But there again, you know, we talked about this all last season as well. When you've got such a great team as Barcelona has, you zero in on the weakest part of it. So when you're saying they're weak, you're not actually saying they're weak. What you're saying, it's the weakest part of a great team.
Yeah.
Which is coming completely different. The weakest part of a great team might still be stronger than the next team.
Yeah, the one thing that you look at would be Pique, potentially. As you said,
a good player.
Strikers, you know, on a shoulder,
yeah.
And
but he's still quick. He's deceptively quick, and he's also such a fine passer.
The thing is, if he does make an error, he's got the pace to get back and at least hurry a striker into doing something.
Yep.
He can close him down and just beat his ankles be a nuisance.
The way Barcelona play, you have to have some pace at the back.
Yeah, but yeah, going ahead for the new season, once it does get going, this battle between these two sides is just... It's just incredible. I mean, such different styles to begin with. Two completely different managers. Two completely different cultures. This is, you know, it feeds into history.
Yeah. It's politics. Probably, and we talked about this a little bit before, but it's the late 50s, early part of the 60s, getting replayed out in a much more global way because of television and technology.
Yeah.
And perhaps, you know, really, we missed the 50s. We saw the 50s. We watched the 50s in retrospect, and Real Madrid were obviously the winners in that one. But we're seeing this one played out game after game after game, and we get the chance to watch it, which we never got a chance then to do.
Mourinho has always been a winner wherever he went, and he has struggled significantly to deal with always being second best. That frustration
and,
seems
and
to
the insult from Barcelona about being the translator.
But being the translator, that sort of frustration seems to have extended to the pitch at particular moments. But if Jose Mourinho, in his astoundingly good second season, which is traditionally proven to be incredible for him, wherever he's gone, if he doesn't end up with a trophy at the end of this season. I should rephrase that. If he ends up with even a meaningless trophy at the end of this season, is this...
Which is the cup again.
Which is...
Because you wouldn't say the league was meaningless, and you wouldn't say Champions League. Although, Real Madrid have fired coaches that have won the Champions League before.
Yes, that's
on a couple of occasions.
If this does not go according to plan, obviously he won a power battle in the summer with Valano. Is it wavy bye-bye time for Jose come the end of the
season?
Don't
know where to go after that. That's the problem. Where do you go?
Back to normality, I would
but
think.
Can this is Perez somebody that can... This is Perez. Perez is
well,
man.
It's a lunatic in charge of the asylum, isn't it?
Where does a lunatic turn then? You know, who's on the horizon? Does he go for Villas-Boas? But you've gone through... Pretty. You know, that's the problem, is you just keep on going through managers. Now, eventually, someone's going to click. Or Barcelona are going to, you know, just have an off season. Some will happen eventually. And, you know, success is never eternal.
Mm.
There's ups and downs, but it's just you can't. I can't logically see where Real Madrid would turn after Mourinho if they decide to can him after 2 years. He's going to get at least 2 years unless he's... I think Mourinho's leaving a Real Madrid will be a self destruction. It won't be a firing. He's the kind of guy that'll do something really stupid.
Like what he did at the end of the Super Cup with second leg, for instance.
Yeah, and it'll just be a breaking point, because you point out that this hatred, this disgust with anything Barcelona, certainly gets to him to a much greater extent than anything has ever got to him before that we can see. And on the other side, you've got Barcelona, as I said in the show on Friday, I've got this great motivator. If Guardiola ever thinks that team's getting complacent, stick a picture of
Jose
Mourinho up in the dressing room, and you've got the guys fired up again.
Here's an interesting thing that's just come into my mind. Ferguson, when he took over at United, and infamously said about Liverpool, "We're going to knock him off the effing perch."
Yeah.
Now, he was given seven years before he won a league. And that obviously had a conveyor belt of success following on from it. Mourinho doesn't have that time.
He's not going to be getting 6
but
years.
Is it going to be a situation where it's, I will not quit until I knock them off their effing perch?
Well, I'm not quite so sure that it's one of these things. If he's that wound up about it, there's always a chance he does something stupid before that. But that is ultimately the only success, the only judgment, whether Mourinho succeeds or fails, is whether he does knock Barcelona off the perch. Because if he doesn't, he fails. If he does, he succeeds. Do you think he can succeed?
What I would say is
and
that...
What does knocking off perch consist of?
Well, this is the thing, and I know we're kind of rabbiting on this. It taps into a discussion we'll have to have at a later date. But the thing about, if you focus so intensely on beating the other guy,
yeah,
is it what's in between where you become lax?
Where you can stumble as well.
And you become so focused
on
that person is so evil. We need... They are just the Antichrist.
J.R. Ewing and Cliff Barnes.
What are you talking about?
Dallas. This is Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Mourinho and Pep Guardiola is J.R. and Bobby Ewing. Or Cliff Barnes, I should say. Bobby Ewing was... I'm getting mixed up with the characters, but Cliff Barnes never got the better of J.R.
But if Cliff Barnes, in a wide turn of events, took a shotgun to J.R. and shot him dead...
Yeah.
He probably would have got the better of him there, though.
He would have, but he didn't.
Just a couple of rewrites and...
Then somebody would have woken up in the shower or something.
There you go. So the day that Mourinho gets the better of Pep Guardiola, we'll wake up the following day and go, it was all a dream to begin with.
That brings to an end our podcast. I'm Bobby McMahon, and on behalf of Ono Callahan and producer Luke Crawford, thank you for allowing us to be part of your day. Until the next time, goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Soccer Report Extra podcast. For more great soccer news, highlights, and analysis, watch the Fox Soccer Report every night at 10 p.m. Eastern on Fox Soccer and Fox Sports World Canada. And be sure to check out SoccerReportExtra.com daily for previews, opinions, and reviews. Music for this podcast provided by SoundJay.com.